We are doing Pirkei Avot. We are up to the fifth chapter, the eighth Mishnah in many editions of Pirkei Avot. The Mishnah begins, the seventh Mishnah, I'm sorry. Shiva Devarim Begolem. Aha. What's a golem?
The stone guy.
So, golem is a term that's used in halacha. Golem is a vessel that has not been completely fashioned. It's a vessel. It could be a knife that hasn't been sharpened. It could be a vessel that hasn't had the finishing touches placed on it. So, Shiva Devarim Begolem. We have seven things in a person that's an unfinished product. And here, there's a discussion among the commentaries. What level person are we talking about? Are we talking about someone who's smart, he just hasn't completed his learning, he's not yet a finished product? Or are we talking about someone who's not yet a finished human being? He's like subhuman in that his behavior is that of someone who's just unrefined in, as far as humanity. When we say golem, he's unfinished. The question is, he hasn't yet finished what? He hasn't yet finished. He hasn't yet reached the base humanity, the base finishing touches of being a refined human being. Or do we mean he is unfinished in that he hasn't yet reached the level of acting in complete wisdom? And different Rishonim, different commentaries understand this Mishnah differently. At any rate, the Mishnah is telling us how we are supposed to behave. Whether this is the top level or this is the base level, that's a question that's discussed. If you want to see two contemporaries that discuss it, it's Maimonides and Rashi. The Rambam and Rashi, in their commentaries, they divide on this matter. So the Mishnah says as follows. Shiva Devarim Begolem. There are seven things you'll notice about someone who's unrefined. V'shiva Bechacham. And
wait,
seven...
the beginning?
No. We're in the seventh Mishnah. And seven, in someone who is wise. Chacham, a wise person. And the Mishnah is going to list seven things that a wise person does. And at the conclusion, the Mishnah is going to say, and the golem does the exact opposite. The Mishnah doesn't bother telling us what the opposite is, but it's self-evident from the Mishnah. So we say there are seven in a golem, seven in a chacham. What does a chacham do? What does a wise person do? We will explain seven things, and then we will say, and the reverse is true of a golem. What does a chacham do? Eino medaber bifnei mi shu gadol mimenu. He does not speak in front of someone who is greater than him, bechokhmah uveminyan, greater than him either in wisdom, or in number of years, he has more experience, he has more students, he's got more experience.
Okay. And he learned from them.
So, number one is he likes to hear what someone who's smarter than him has to say. He's not quick to say what he thinks. He first wants to hear what smarter people have to say. That's one. Ve'ino nichnas l'toch divrei chavero. Number two is he doesn't interrupt. If his friend, not his rabbi, not his teacher, even his friend is telling him something, he listens.
Yeah, but what if he's wrong not to interrupt?
When would he be wrong?
That was a joke. I interrupted you.
Okay. So number two is he doesn't interrupt. He waits for someone else to finish. Even his friend, he waits for him to finish what he's saying. De'eino nivhal la'ashiv. Now the word over here nivhal could mean he's not scared of answering, or eino nivhal could mean he's not quick. De'hala is someone who acts quickly. He's not quick to respond. He waits to hear everything that someone makes claiming against him, and he's, after he's heard the other side through and through, then he responds. Number three, yeah? Now number four. Shoel Kainyan. His questions are fitting with the topic at hand. We're in the middle of talking about Mishnah, and he walks in, he's not going to ask us about science or a different class or something else. This is what we're discussing. So he's Shoel Kanyan. His questions have to do with the topic at hand. His questions are fitting. umeshiv kahalacha. And his responses are also clear. He gives a response that that's kahalacha, in accordance with kahalacha. Meshiv kahalacha, according to some commentaries, is an introduction to the next line. Meshiv kahalacha, he responds the way a person should. His response is the way the halacha expects a person to respond. Ve'omer, and the way he responds is al rishon rishon ve'al acharon acharon. The first question you ask me, the answer is this. And the last question you ask me, the answer is that. He goes in order of the person who asked him the questions. Ba'al ma shelo shama, omer lo shamati. If someone asks him something and he doesn't have a tradition, what the answer is, he says, I don't have a tradition. What I think the answer is, he'll give his own opinion. But he clarifies that what he's saying is not based on tradition. You'll notice that Rashi often does this. Every so often you find in Rashi, he says, I don't have a tradition how to explain this section of the Talmud, but I think the explanation is so-and-so. And from these lines in Rashi, we can infer that everything else Rashi writes is based on tradition. Umodeh al ha'emet, and he admits to the truth. He isn't embarrassed to say, I made a mistake. Moshe Rabbeinu, a few weeks ago, we read in the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu made a mistake. He came to Aaron and his children, and he said, "Why'd you guys burn the chatas meat?" So Aaron told him, "God told you that the unique sacrifice of today, of the inauguration of the Mishkan, should be eaten. Did God also tell you to absolve the rules of the standard Rosh Chodesh sacrifice and to eat that as well?" And Moshe said, "You're right. God didn't tell me that." Moshe called his men in, he had the trumpets blown, he called all of the Jewish people together, and he sent word, "I was wrong and Aaron was right. I want you all to know I made a mistake. The halacha is like Aaron said." He wasn't embarrassed. That's what our Mishnah says. Modeh al ha'emet, he admits to the truth. Meaning a person has to set as a goal before him to attain truth. And if our goal is the truth, then we have to be impartial to the truth. If the truth lies with the other party, so be it. So the Mishnah enumerated seven traits, and the Mishnah concludes and teaches us, V'chilufeyem v'golem, and a person who's not completely refined will behave in the exact opposite way. Clear? Okay, Mishnah Chet. The Mishnah really is connected to Mishnah Tet. The Mishnah tells us, Shiva minepo aniyot ba'in la'olam, there are seven types of disasters that come to the world, al shiva gufei avera, and they're really a resultant of seven types of sins. Mitzatan me'asri, mitzatan einan me'asri, some of the people are tithing, they're taking off their tithe, the ma'asir, to give to the poor. And some aren't. Rav shel batzoret ba. So then, God makes a drought, and the drought causes a famine. Miktatan ra'evim, miktatan sevim. And some have enough to eat, and some people are going hungry. Gamru shelo la'aser, if the people then say, okay, for sure we're not taking off a tithe, if we're short on food. Ra'av shel me'umah, vishel batzoret ba. So then God makes it that the famine also moves up a notch, and people are so perturbed that even when they eat, they're not satiated. And then everyone's going hungry, because even the people that have food are so worried about the future that everyone goes hungry. If people decide, we're not taking off anything, even a little bit of dough, we're supposed to give the coin, that dough is called challah. Then, ha'av shel klayata. Then God sends a famine that causes people to die. Until people decide not to give anything away, the famine doesn't kill. It's troubling, people are hungry, but people don't die. So long as people are giving a little bit of what they have to others, they stay alive. The second people say, I can't even give a little bit away, then God says, okay, people start dying from the hunger. It fits the order the Mishnah told us. So that was the first type of disaster that comes to the world. And the Mishnah tells us it comes from the fact that people are not giving other people who need. They have food, but they're not giving away. And the more stingy people become, the worse the drought and the shortage of food. The Mishnah continues, Devar ba'al olam, why does a plague come to the world? people start dying, there's some kind of disease. Al mitzot hamuvot b'Torah shelo nimseru lebetin. Cause number one is there are death penalties that the courts cannot administer. There are things that there were no witnesses. The courts can't kill him. So then God sends a plague to the world. God finds ways of getting rid of people who are doing sins that they deserve the death penalty, but the courts can't touch them.
But doesn't a plague kill a bunch of people who didn't do anything?
Good question. So that brings us to a different discussion, which we cannot go into at length, but there is a concept that that God says, once I let destruction come to the world, then it destroys with a wide hand. That's why God tells the Jewish people, even at the time that that God is killing the firstborn of the Egyptians, you guys stay inside. Right. God can't discern between us and the Egyptians.
That's why they left during the day, right? The next, it started at midnight, they left during the daytime.
I'm unfamiliar with that.
We just learned about this with Rabbi Lisman.
Yeah.
He said that was why?
He said it takes a while to gather in the whole nation. I mean, the plague started at midnight, he said.
2 hours
the plague started at midnight and they wanted people
to go. He said power comes out in his pajamas. It's like, okay, you can go. And then they
2 hours to get organized.
Because he asked us, did they leave during the night of 15 Nisan or during the day?
God forbade them leaving their homes at night. They couldn't leave their homes at night, and the Talmud says the reasoning was that once God lets death settle into the world, then right. It's dangerous for everyone.
Because the angel
of death
was
have to stay
going around at night.
So the Jews had to stay indoors. But the Talmud gives a different reason why God wanted them to go out midday. The Talmud says God didn't want the Egyptians to say they snuck out, they made it out when we weren't looking, or to give some kind of other excuse. So God said, in broad daylight, when you cannot make any claims afterwards, I will take my children out of Egypt. So that's why I'm not sure that the listening meant to connect with you. I'm not sure. So, going back, the Mishnah says, God sends a plague to the world over the death penalties of the Torah that are not in the hands of the courts. But perot shri'it, and over the fruits of the seventh year, when people don't let the land go fallow, they don't let the poor and they don't let everyone eat from their fruits, that's another reason that God sends a plague to the world. Cherev ba la'olam, why does a war come to the world? Al inui hadin, because of judges who detain giving ruling, that's called inui hadin, the affliction of justice. They've come to a conclusion and they don't give ruling, they just torture. Psychological torture. They give psychological torture to the people at hand. The Bible prohibits that. The Torah tells us that once a court has come to a conclusion, the court must give ruling. So, inui hadin is the what we might call the affliction of justice. Yes, Shmuel?
Yeah, now that you mentioned about the court, I'm just curious about something. Like, if the Jewish court is interrogating somebody to get information, can they use methods of torture? Like, they use in Guantanamo to get information from terrorists? You know, like human rights, how far can the court go?
Let's leave that for Thursday night, okay?
Alright. Maybe can you just give a brief overview if it's loud or not?
I don't think I can give you an accurate answer in under 3 or 4 minutes. I'd much rather give you an accurate answer.
Sure.
Okay. But write it down. Let's discuss it Thursday night.
Yeah, definitely. I remember.
So, the Mishnah says, God sends war to the world over the miscarriage of justice, the affliction of justice, the alivut hadin, and when justice is twisted, when the judges are judging unfairly, they're accepting bribes, v'alamurim b'torah shelo k'alacha. And the Mishnah concludes, over those who give ruling in Torah improperly. The person asks him, am I permitted to eat this? And he says, yes. The person asks him, are you permitted to eat this? And he says, no. Either way, if what he said is wrong, so that's something which God is very upset over. God doesn't want us to give ruling in Torah unless we know the correct answer. And it doesn't matter if we're more stringent or more lenient. At the end of the day, if what we said is wrong, and stems from lack of knowledge, so then we're held accountable. Chaya ra'a ba'al ha'olam, God sends wild animals to the world, ad shvuat shav, over people who swear falsely, so they're desecrating God's name. God gave us a capacity to be godly. The human capacity revolves around speech. Everything else that we do, other animals also do. Other animals love, other animals build, other animals climb, other animals fight. Other animals, they do everything similar to what we do. God made us godly in our capacity to speak.
Well, what about sign language? Remember Coco the gorilla? They taught it sign language? Like, no. I mean, that's speech.
Okay. I didn't say other animals don't communicate. I said speech.
But the sign language is speech.
Sign language is communication.
So it's not vocal speech.
Right. So when we take that godly capacity, it says, "Vayipach ba'apach nishmat chayim." When God created man, He blew into him spirit of life. And the Targum translates it as ruach memalala, the spirit that speaks, the capacity to speak. That's a defining characteristic of man. So when man uses that in an improper fashion, he takes God's name in vain. He swears falsely. I swear there was a Mack truck 10 stories wide going down the highway. I just couldn't pass it. I swear I left my house on time. I don't know why I made it late for the meeting. When a person swears in vain, so he's using his capacity for speech, and he's desecrating God's name. He's desecrating that capacity as well. Then chilul Hashem, and on the desecration of God's name. So over these two, God says, you've used your capacity to be great, and you've used it to degrade yourself and degrade me. So God says, then I'll put you at the hands of those that are one level lower than you. I created the human above the animals. The animals aren't supposed to take over the humans. When do I send wild animals to take over humans? When the humans put themselves down to the level of animals. That's when chaya ra'a ba'al ha'olam. Wild animals, the bad animals come over our misuse of speech. Galut ba'al ha'olam. When does God bring galut, that people are exiled? Al avodat kochavim, al pilui arayot, al shlichut tamim. Over paganism, idol worship, over gilui arayot, prohibited relationships, and murder, val shmitat haaretz, and over not keeping the laws of Shemitah. Ba'ba'af rakim ha-devil mitrabim. The Mishnah then tells us there are four times when God makes the plagues get worse. Ba'vi'it, uva'shvi'it, in the fourth year of the Shemitah cycle, the seventh year of the Shemitah cycle, uv'motzei shvi'i, and at the end of the seventh year of the Shemitah cycle, at the end of Shemitah, uv'motzei achav shel chol shana v'shana, and after Sukkot of every year. Why? We know in the third year we give the tithe to the poor, right? First and second year we give to the lady. Third year to the poor. Fourth and fifth year to the lady. Sixth year to the poor. So on the fourth year, now that the third year is just finished and people did not give their tithe to the poor, so then on the fourth year the plagues get worse. On the seventh year, because on the sixth year people didn't give their tithe. And at the conclusion of the Shemitah, at the end of the seventh year, because people didn't give the fruit to the poor, they didn't make the fruit available to everyone in the Shemitah year. And at the end of the Sukkot of every year, because in Sukkot we're supposed to give the poor their gifts, and people haven't, so then God gets upset at them. You'll notice two points. That the Mishnah says, it's always after the year we were supposed to give the gifts to the poor. And the Mishnah also says that God waits till the time passes. Meaning, after the third year, after the sixth year, at the end of the seventh year, God always waits. Even though God knows in advance whether we'll do it or not, God waits. So, God says, I wait every day, come back. Have a change of heart. Yes? You want something?
Can I just turn around the
internet? Yeah. How do I move? Mishnah Yud. There are four types of people. And this Mishnah can be read simply. After we read it simply, I'd like us to take a minute to hear what Rav Hirsch has to say on the Mishnah. because this Mishnah really teaches us an attitude that's important to the different kind of economic systems that people espouse in the world, be it capitalism or communism. Let's see the Mishnah, and then let's see the verse's expansion on the Mishnah. Arba midot ba'adam. There are four types of people. Ha'omel, someone who declares sheli sheli v'shelach shelach. What's mine is mine. What's yours is yours. Zo mida benoni. So that's a mediocre life.
Mine is you. Oh, well, that's the last one.
V'yeshu, and some say zo mida tzdom, that this is the trait of the Sodomites. They were insistent, I don't want anything from you, you don't take anything from me, leave me to mine, you stick with yours. So according to some, this is really a bad trait. On the surface level, it's a mediocre trait. I'm not taking anything from you, and I'm not asking you, I'm not giving you anything of mine. But if it's a mediocre trait, then we learn it from Shmuel. The great prophet Shmuel, he never wanted favors from anyone. Wherever he traveled, he'd take along all the things he needed to set up camp wherever he'd go, so that he didn't have to be a guest by anyone. He never had to take favors. But the opinion that says it's a bad trait, they say that's true. Shmuel didn't take anything from anyone, but he spent his life giving other people of his own. So he wasn't. It's not right to say that Shmuel espoused this behavior of saying what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. Shmuel said, what's yours is yours, I don't want favors from you. But Shmuel was happy doing favors to others, so that's the Yeshuim. They say you can't really learn this trait from Shmuel. This is a bad trait. If I don't want, and we'll expand on that in reverse. Sheli Shelach, the Shelach Sheli, someone who declares, what's mine is yours, what's yours is mine, we sit down for a meal, I'll have some of your drink, you'll have some of mine, I'll eat your schnitzel, you'll eat my pita, I'll have your beer, you'll have my water, I'll use your computer, you'll use my shovel. So that's the Mishnah says, Am Haaretz. It's a person who's an Am Haaretz. He doesn't respect the idea that I'm mine and you have yours, and if you want to give me, you can give me, but you can't demand me to give you. When a person sets up a system where we're all together, everyone can have everything from everyone, the Mishnah doesn't approve of that. Mishnah says that's an Am Haaretz. Sheli Shelah, the Shelach Shelah. Someone says, you could use my items. Yours are yours, but you're welcome to use mine. That's a Chassid. Sheli Sheli, the Shelach Sheli. Someone who says, what's mine is mine, don't you touch mine. But what's yours is also mine. That says the Mishnah, that's a Rasha. Now, in truth, there is room here to delve into what the word Am Haaretz means. We didn't stress it so much, but really Maimonides in the 7th Mishnah, the Rambam in his commentary goes into what does each term mean? What is an Am Haaretz? What's a Chassid? What's a Rasha? What's a Chacham? What's a Bur? These different terms, they each have specific meanings. And the question is, Maimonides seems to say that an Am Haaretz is someone who at least he has the basic knowledge of how to be a member of society. A boor lacks even that. But an Am Haaretz, he's not learned in wisdom, he's not learned in Torah, but he knows how to be a good member of society. And this Mishnah seems to give the title Am Haaretz to someone who does not know how to be a good member of society. He says, what's yours is mine, what's mine is yours. He doesn't respect the concept of private ownership. So let's see, that's something that needs work. This Mishnah and the Rambam's explanation of the word Am Haaretz. Rav Hirsch says as follows, and if you want an expansion on this, Rav Henkin also wrote a long essay on this subject, on the subject of why communism won't work, why that cannot work, and why the Torah really is for. The Torah encourages private enterprise and competition, and the Torah outlook on how you set up an economic system. So Rav Hirsch writes like this. The concept that every person should have what's his, at first glance, that seems to be a mediocre way to go. It somewhere between good and bad. I won't take yours, you don't take mine. But some say that's a bad trait, because the truth is that what that trait is espousing is an attitude that precludes chesed. And the fundamental basis of a community is that we do chesed for one another. That we're going to do kindness to one another. When we set as a precept, when we set as a basic rule between us that I keep what's mine and you keep what's yours, you stay within your parameter, I'll stay within mine. What we're basically saying is, I'm not going to help you and you don't help me. And that, says Rav Hirsch, that's midat sdom. So that's why the first understanding is, it's respecting everyone's own possessions. And the Yeshurim says, no, you can't begin a society, you can't set that as a basis for a society, because society is based on chesed. We help one another out. And without helping one another, loving one another, a person loses his godliness. If it's all about competition, then we're all dogs. If it's all about a dog-eat-dog world, then we really are all dogs. Our goal as human beings is to rise above them. So that's why the Yeshurim says, if we set up a society where this is a given, what's mine is mine and yours is yours, we're setting up a destructive society, a society that cannot be godly. The second attitude, what's mine is yours, and what's yours is mine, that's an attitude that says everything is everyone's. Well then, there's nothing that's privately owned, and this type of communal relationship, well, that's also a foolish attitude to life, that really one should have pity over people who want to set up such a society. The second you preclude a person, an individual's ownership of items, so then you're precluding every individual's potential for independence. If I don't own my home, if I don't own my car, if I don't own my clothing, well then I'm not independent. By making everything mutually owned, you're making a society in which I own nothing. Well, if I own nothing, if everything is owned by everyone and I own nothing, then I lose my right to be independent. I lose my individualism. If I own nothing, then I also cannot do chesed. Because I don't have a choice whether to give you my object, because it's not mine any more than it's yours. If we live on a kibbutz, where everyone owns everything together, well then it's not my car. Right now I have a right to use it, but you also have a right to use it. And if you demand it, well I'm not doing chesed when I let you use my car. So Rav Hirsch says, it's pitiful to look upon people who want to set up a society this way, because they're taking away a person's independence and they're taking away a person's capacity for doing kindness.
Rabbi,
I'm with you.
I'm kind of tired. I want to go to bed a bit early, but I had a question. What if someone makes unreasonable requests? I mean, I say, oh, you just had a new daughter, Zavora. I have a daughter of my own. I miss the chance to have a child.
You communicate. Like, what are you supposed to do in the face of something like that?
Well, like, give me your house. I mean, how do you respond to that? If what's, you know, mine is yours, how do you respond to the reasonable request?
So let's finish the mission, Anzi.
Okay.
So, Rav Hirsch is saying, when the Mishnah continues and says, what's mine is yours, what the Mishnah is saying is, firstly, there's a sheli. And when I say shelach, shelach, when I conclude my sentence and I say, what's yours is yours, what I'm basically saying is, things are privately owned. Your house is yours. Well, if your house is yours, then intrinsic to that is that my house is mine. But when I say sheli, shelach, what's mine, I'm willing to give you, I don't mean I'll give you everything I own. I mean, I'm willing to give you things that I own. So then I'm looking at society in a healthy way. I'm saying, we each own our own things. Because shalach shalach. What's yours is yours. Well, if what's yours is yours, then it means every individual owns their own things. Well, then I could do chesed. Then I could have a correct attitude to life. You know what? I'll be happy to let you use my object. You have two roommates. So one tells the other roommate, you know, everything that's mine you could use. You want to use my toaster, you want to use my oven, you want to use my, if you, it's cold and I'm not around and you need a jacket, you could borrow my jacket. Does he mean you could take my wallet and take my money in my wallet? I don't think so. He means I have objects and you want to use them. So you could use them. I'm happy to lend them to you. Shali shalach doesn't mean I'll give you my car, I'll give you my house, I'll give you my wife, I'll give you my kids, I'll give you everything I own. That's not what it means. Shali shalach means, just like shalach shalach, yours is yours, but you should know that there are a lot of objects which are mine that I'll be happy to make available to you.
So is it because giving everything away prevents your ability to do hesed? That's the problem? Like if I give you everything I have, obviously I can't give to anyone else.
There's a separate discussion. There are levels in chesed. Chazal said a person is supposed to do chesed, don't forget your own family. A person has to know how to do chesed. There are levels in chesed. But this Mishnah doesn't mean a person should come along and say you could have everything in mine is yours. What the Mishnah is saying is that the correct attitude, the pious attitude, is a person that respects that what's yours is yours and at the same time is willing to give of his own. And he doesn't expect that you give back yours. He's happy to give you his.
So wait, does this tie in with the idea of lending money for profit? Because you can lend money, when you get money back, you can't get any interest. But, I mean, is giving money away just the best of any of these options?
Let's leave that for Thursday night.
Okay.
Because that's a different question. That's a question of how you should do kindness with your fellow man. The Mishnah is discussing, according to her version at least, the Mishnah is discussing what kind of society should be set up, what attitude should we have in partnerships or when we set things up. And I think that in that regard, the Mishnah is saying, when a person sets up a system, he has to think, he has to recognize that there is private ownership. There is mine and there is yours. And then there's my capacity to do kindness, and I'm willing to do kindness, and I'll give you of mine, but it's still mine. I'll give you of mine.
So therefore, requesting a payment is a good thing.
I'm not following you.
Well, because, you, I mean, if you have to take care of yourself, but you go out of your way to lend someone some money, you can just give it as a gift, but that giving it as a gift doesn't necessarily make it a higher level than giving a loan.
Correct. There are 10 levels in tzedakah. The highest level is giving him a job.
Right, so that way, like,
so giving him a job is better than giving him money.
It's better to teach him how to fish than to give him fish.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. So, I very often don't give people, if I have a gemah, very often I won't give people money. Tell them it's a loan, and sometimes we'll make the loan to take a course, to get a job. Get a license, to become a taxi driver, to do certain things so that a person will be able to help themselves and pay the money back. There's no, we don't see it as an end. Good, give the guy money. The person, he has 15 kids at home, he has no food to feed them, and they've shut the electric. Right now, what he needs is money. But you also have to think long term. What's going to happen next week or next month? But that's not this Mishnah.
I'm going to go to bed now.
And then the conclusion of the Mishnah, so that's very easily understood. Someone whose attitude is what's yours is mine, and of course I'm keeping what's mine is mine, that's a Rasha. Mishnah Yud, we have Kach?
Yeah.
Okay, Mishnah Yud. Alba Midot Ba'adam. Or Yudalit, I'm sorry. Alba Midot Ba'deot. There are four types of attitudes. Noflichos, a person who angers easily. Venoflichos, you could also appease him easily. Yatzascharo behefsido. So then, even though he's easy to anger, even though he's easy to appease, but because he'll easily get angry again, so we say yatzascharo, the good wages that he has, that at least he's easy to appease, he. That gets lost with the fact that he's easy to anger again. So, he loses what he might have gained. Now here again, Rav Hirsch has a very interesting understanding. He says that there's lehit ratzot, and that is that if you come and ask my forgiveness, I'll forgive you, I'll get appeased. And then there's liratzot or liutzot, and that is that a person is willing to forgo, even though they didn't ask his forgiveness. He doesn't bear a grudge. He's willing to let go. Being the Rebbe Chatan Yerushalot, this is a tremendous key to building a good home. Not bearing a grudge. So the Mishnah says, if a person has the trait that he is noach liutzot, that he's easily willing to forgive, even without the other person asking, so then that's a tremendous, it's a tremendous asset, person who has that trait. But being that he's quick to anger, if he's noach liutzot, noach lichos, v'noach liutzot, so then it's interesting, because here there are different versions in the Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, yatzas charo b'efsedo. He's lost his wages with his loss, because it's easy to anger again. Rav Hirsch has the girsa that the Mishnah says the exact opposite. Yatza efsedo bischaro. His loss is, so to speak, covered up by his gain. Because even though he's easy to anger, at least he's willing to forgive on his own, and he's willing to let it pass on his own. So that at least balances out. That outweighs the fact that he's easy to anger. That's a different deal, so I don't have to read the Mishnah. Kashelichos, v'kashelichot. If someone is difficult to anger, and when he gets angry, though, he's difficult to appease, so then, again, our Mishnah says, yatzav sedo bischaro, that his loss, that he's hard to appease, gets outdone by his wages, that at least he's hard to anger. That's our Mishnah. And Rav Hirsch says the opposite. Yatzas chavo b'efsedo. Here Rav Hirsch says he's lost his gain by the fact that he's hard to appease, because Rav Hirsch says every person at some point is going to get ticked off. In every relationship there are going to be numerous things over and over again that can get a person upset. And that's why this trait that a person has capacity, is willing to forgive, even without being asked forgiveness, is willing to let go, he doesn't bear a grudge, that trait is so important, because part of our relationships is that we will get angry at one another. That's intrinsic to any two human beings connected. Kashelichos, not yutzot, someone who's hard to anger, and he's easy to appease, he lets go easily, he's a chassid. Noach lichos, someone who is easy to anger, the kasherim tzot, and in his heart to appease, that's a rasha, that's a wicked person, because in life there will be many things every day that can cause a person to get upset. And our sages taught, lo tiltach ve lo teftet. Don't get angry and you won't sin. A person who is quick to anger is also quick to sin. Anger leads a person to error, anger leads a person to sin. So when a person is difficult to appease, he's got a problem in his life. Because whatever traits he has, even if he doesn't anger easily, at the end of the day, everyone gets angry eventually. And if a person is not willing to let go, then he's going to have problems throughout his life. And that's the way Rav Hirsch explains the mission. Mishnah Yud Bet. Some Mishnah Yod, it's Mishnah Yud. Mishnah Yud Bet.
Right.
There are four types of students, and Maimonides over here points out that the Mishnah doesn't call any one of them a tzaddik or any one of them a rasha. The Mishnah is simply describing a fact, something that a person cannot help. Meher lishmo, meher la'aved, a student who's quick to understand but he's quick to forget, yatzas chavo b'efsedo, he's lost what he's gained. By being quick to understand, he loses it by the fact that he's also quick to forget. And here Rav Hirsch has a very interesting insight. He says, when does a person forget easily? When he takes the information in a lax manner. When a person listens, but he's not so focused, and he's not putting his strength into it, so he hears things in a very superficial manner, and then he's quick to forget. And part of the idea is that a person figures, this is easy, whenever I want, I'll learn it again, I'll review it again, it's always there to be had, he's quick to forget. When a person has to work hard to learn, so then usually what we work hard to learn we remember, but not always. So that's what the Mishnah says. There are those who are quick to learn and quick to forget. So even though they're quick to learn, what they've gained by that, they've lost by the fact that they're quick to forget. Kasheli shmo, a person who has a hard time understanding. The kasheli abed, but once he's got it, he's got it. He doesn't forget. It's hard for him to forget. Yatzav sado b'sfaro, he should know that even though he has a certain impediment, it's hard for him to learn, but that goes out in the gain. The gain outweighs it. The gain that at least after he invests his effort, at the end of the day, he remembers. So even though he has to invest a lot of effort to get it, but at the end of the day, that helps him remember. I know one of the big rabbis of our day, he once told me, he said, I have one of the poorest memories you can imagine. When I pick up my head from the book to go to the shelf to get a book, by the time I get to the shelf, I forget what book I was going to get. He told me, I've one of the worst memories you can imagine. But people don't believe me I have such a bad memory, because I work hard and hard, and today I have to quote much of the Shas by heart. But it didn't come easy. I had to work day and night, because I have a very bad memory. So, that's this Mishnah. If a person has a difficult time learning, but then when he works hard and he learns, then it's hard for him to forget. He retains it, so he should know that even though it's tough that it's hard to learn, but that's outweighed by the fact, by his gain, that he won't forget. He will retain it. Maher lishma v'kashe la'aved, someone who can understand quickly and he retains it, he doesn't forget it, that's a chacham, he's been blessed. Kashe lishma v'maher la'aved, but there are those students who have a very hard time learning. And after they invest their strength and they finally understand, they're quick to forget. Zechelekra, that's a bad lot. The Mishnah, so to speak, feels bad for a person who got that lot. He still has to do his best and grow, but he also has to recognize it's not his fault. You know, some people, everyone was given their blessing and their challenge. We have to work with the tools we're given. Mishnah Yud Gimel. Arba'a midot minotnei tzedakah. There are four types of attitudes among people who give tzedakah. Harotzei sheiten velo yitnu acherim. Someone wants to give, but he doesn't want other people to give. So he doesn't want other people to do tzedakah. That's not good. Eino ra'av shel acherim. He's a person that has a bad eye. He looks badly upon other people. It's wrong. A person should want everyone to grow. Sometimes people want to keep mitzvot to themselves, and it's a wrong attitude. There's a story about one of the rabbis who was approached for a big mitzvah. There were Jews held in captivity. So he had the money, but he only gave part of the money. So they asked him, why don't you give all the money? So he said, but the whole community chip in. Everyone has to chip in for this mitzvah. I shouldn't take the mitzvah for myself alone. A person has to want everyone to participate in the mitzvah. So the Mishnah says, a person who wants to be the one that gives, and that no one else should give, that's considered that he has a bad eye when it comes to others. Yitnu acherim v'hu lo yiten. If a person's attitude is, let everyone give, but not me. Eino ra'av v'shelo. He's got a bad eye when it comes to his own money. He's stingy. He doesn't want to get the mitzvah himself. Yiten v'yitnu acherim. If someone wants that he himself should give tzedakah and others will give tzedakah, that's a chassid. But if someone's attitude is, I don't want to give and don't bug anyone else to give, that's a rasha. Mishnah Yud Dalet. Arba midot porchei lebet hamidrash. There are four types of people who go to Beis Medrash. Now, remember, the Mishnah is talking in a time when people did not have books at home. All of the Talmud and the Mishnah was recounted orally. So, if you didn't go to Beis Medrash to learn Torah, you were very limited. You could read the Tanakh and you didn't understand much. And that was as far as you could get.
How could you remember so much information?
Well,
yeah, they worked on it. Books are after
they worked on it. They worked on it. Day and night. They worked on it. So that's why the Mishnah says,
huh?
They can teach him. If someone goes to Beis Medrash and he doesn't produce, but he's there. So he goes to Beis Medrash and he doesn't produce Sara the Kapi Ador, but he'll get wages for the fact that he went. Because at the end of the day, if you're found in this Medrash and everyone around you is learning, you're doing good things and you'll catch good things and you'll learn good traits. It's not ideal, but he's still going to get wages for the fact that he bothered to go. Sometimes people say, why should I go to a Shabbos HaGadol Drasha? I don't understand the rabbi. Fine, okay. It's a good part of the community that goes to the Drasha. If you go to a rabbi who you do understand, good. But if in your community this is your rabbi, so at least go to that. The fact that a person goes, that's already, he's going to get something for that. Osebe Nolech, the other person who learns at home, he produces. But he doesn't bother going to the Beis Midrash. That's not the ideal. A person should ideally learn in the Beis Midrash if he could. But if he's at least producing in his own home, Sama Sebiado, he'll get wages for what he's done. Holech Osebe, someone goes to the Beis Midrash and he produces, that's the way a person should be, that's a chassid. Lolech Osebe, someone stays at home, he sleeps late Shabbos afternoon, he doesn't bother going to the Beis Midrash, he doesn't bother learning on his own. That says the Mishnah is a Rasha. A person has to at least try, at least go to the Beis Medrash. You can't learn on your own, listen to what other people are learning. Take out the Medrash says, do something. You can't go to the Beis Medrash, learn at home. A person has to do something. Ideally, a person should go to the Beis Medrash and learn. If he can't do that, he's got to do one or the other. Either learn at home or go to the Beis Medrash, even if he's not going to get that much learning done. And that's a very big point. People sometimes laugh at the Baal Batim who come to Shul and fall asleep in the Rabbi's Drasha. Those who go to Daf Yomi Shir and fall asleep. No one's saying that's the ideal, but a person shouldn't laugh at it. It's much better than the people who don't go. There are a lot of pluses to a person who goes to the shir and falls asleep. Maybe one day he'll stop falling asleep. He catches a lot of points. I don't remember when it was, a week or two ago, I was in a taxi, and the driver sees me learning Daf Yomi. Driver's without a kippah. I was sure he's a not religious Jew. So he tells me, you're doing Daf Yomi? I said, yeah. So he tells me, Bab Matiyah? So I said, yeah. So he says, I'll tell you what it's all about. So he starts telling me what the Gemara is about. So I didn't say anything. I didn't want to embarrass him. But I was thinking to myself, how does a guy like him know? How does he know? So he told me that he took different rabbis in his car, and he always asked them about Torah. And one of them told him, if you want to learn Daf Yomi, I'll teach you. So he goes to the Beis Medrash every night, and this rabbi teaches him Daf Yomi. The rest of the day he doesn't wear kippah, but I'm sure he's in a process. He's headed somewhere. I don't know where he's at now. It's not my job to gauge him. I don't know where he's at now. But you see a guy who goes to the Beis Medrash every night, and he's moving forward. He's telling you things about the Daf. So to tell you he understood exactly, no, he didn't. And the things he told me to tell was that a newcomer quoting Gemara, but he's moving, he's heading somewhere. I wouldn't ask him my Halakha Shailos, but he's heading somewhere. So he might be Holech, he might be going to Beis Medrash Veinose. He's not producing the full Daf. There's no way a guy who's never learned before is learning the full Daf. But he's coming to the Shir, the rabbi gives him the Daf Yomi, and he's getting all kinds of concepts, and he's starting to quote me concepts in Daf Yomi. He's getting somewhere. Give him another 5-10 years, he'll get somewhere. Because he's Olech, because he bothers going to the Beis Medrash every night. So 100% he couldn't. I didn't want to ask him questions. I tried to play along with his line of conversation, and I saw that his knowledge was very limited. But at the same time, I saw here's a person that wants to learn. He's going every night. He will learn. He will. He'll get there. It takes time, but he'll get there. That's the Olech Veinoh said. He might be going and not producing yet. His production is very faulty, and it's not yet, he doesn't yet understand the full Daf. He has a lot of holes in his understanding. He shouldn't be discouraged. That's how he'll grow. He'll get there. So Mishnah reminds us, don't laugh at a person who goes for Daf Yomi and isn't awake for the whole Daf. So what if he falls asleep 5 minutes into this year? He learned 5 minutes. He learned the last 5 minutes. Slowly he's getting there. On some days he sleeps less, some days he sleeps more. He'll get there. He'll get there. He's in the right place at least. He's Holech. So even though in our day and age people could say that I could learn at home, yeah, but we all know what it's like to stay at home. So even though the Mishnah technically was talking about their day and age, when you could not learn at home, you didn't have the Talmud written down, you didn't have the Mishnah written down. In our day and age we can apply this Mishnah. It's not exactly what the Mishnah meant to say, but we can apply the Mishnah practically to us as well.